I want to tell you why I am claiming that polygenic scores are a public health hazard. First, we have to understand what a polygenic score is. And we must go back to 2003, when the Human Genome Project announced the fully sequenced human genome. For this argument, we will call this the healthy human genome. The basic idea is that if the gene sequence of a sick person is compared to the healthy human genome sequence, it would be possible to identify the genes that were causing the sickness. This is something of an oversimplification, but essentially this is what it's all about. This strategy has worked for some rare diseases where only one gene is responsible for the trait. But these rare diseases are only 15% of the human disease burden. The technology to do the same for common diseases, where several genes may have been damaged, has evolved over the last two decades to become what is known as genome-wide association. Using this technique, it has been found that common diseases such as cancer, circulatory disease, diabetes, etc., can be characterized by many so-called single nucleotide polymorphisms, SNPs. That is, differences compared to the healthy genome. Each of these SNPs has been found to have a very marginal effect, and together they account for only a small part of the genetic risk or variance. Furthermore, there is a low level of reproducibility from one study to the next as to the SNPs responsible for any given common disease trait. In order to tackle this more important problem of common disease, the so-called polygenic score has been invoked. Polygenic score sums up the many small contributions from several SNPs to try and characterize the genetic status of the trait in a single figure, the so-called polygenic score. The idea is that a healthy individual's polygenic score for a specific disease trait, say diabetes, can be determined from their gene sequence and therefore indicate their susceptibility to contract diabetes in the future. Such estimates could be made as early as at birth. However, in recent months, studies have shown that polygenic score is not, in fact, a good indicator of the presence or not of a trait. The question is, what has gone wrong? It is a fundamental assumption in genetics that the phenotype is the product of, that is, it is caused by, the genotype. And therefore, changes through, for example, mutation of the genotype or DNA sequence will change the phenotype. This is, in fact, an article of faith, the origin of which is in the early 19th century. There is no way from within the field of genetics to test its validity. It is, however, a crucial assumption for genetics and genomics and for the ability to read phenotype from the genome sequence. My argument is that this article of faith is, in fact, not true. My colleagues and I have proposed a basis in thermodynamics and complex dissipative system dynamics, i.e. fundamental physics, for the way the cell operates. It is radically different from the assumptions that underpin conventional genomics, in that it is not the genotype which is paramount, but the phenotype. The phenotype regulates itself and expresses the cell's properties, drawing upon the genotype as a database for the starting products that constitute the cell, namely the peptides. Critical to this argument is the physical basis of the cellular phenotype, namely a quasi-stable attractor state of a complex dissipative system. And this is what the cell is, because it is shifted from equilibrium by virtue of the fact that it is dissipating free energy. This model is called the independent attractor model, and the word independent is to indicate its independence from DNA. Phenotypic transitions occur without changes in the genotype. The phenotypic output is not genetic but epigenetic. This is not the formulation of new ideas, but rather the recruitment of old ideas into a new framework based in fundamental physics. Thus, cells expressing the disease phenotype did not arrive there because of the abnormalities in the genotype, but rather as a direct transition from a destabilized normal cellular phenotype, where the destabilization is likely environmental in origin. The idea of direct phenotypic transitions has been around since 1949, when Max Delbruck proposed it at a genetics conference in Paris, and it was deployed by the British biologist Conrad Waddington in his explanation of the infinite diversity of species that evolution has produced. There is experimental evidence from radiobiology dating back to 1976 that supports these ideas. This involves the late appearance of a response several generations after a radiation event that triggered it. In the early 1990s, it was termed genomic instability. A recent example is the work of Hooman et al. On irradiated C. elegans, a briefly irradiated population of worms cultured over several generations without any outward signs of damage, showed dramatic gene expression changes in the late generations. These changes would have appeared in the first offspring of the irradiated worms if the modified gene expression was due to changes in the DNA sequence. Thus, the term genomic instability is in fact a misnomer. It is phenotypic instability, and it is a direct consequence of the quasi-stability of the cellular phenotype. Thus, polygenic scores derived from genome-wide association studies are meaningless, because the SNPs detected in such studies are overwhelmingly of no consequence to the phenotype. They are noise. To use them routinely in diagnosis, as has already been proposed, would be a public health hazard. Polygenic scores are, if you like, the symptom of a deeper problem affecting biology. Its whole foundation in genetics is flawed. The flaw affects not just common disease, but all complex traits such as human height, educational attainment, sexuality, etc., as well as the process that underpins evolution itself. The impact on genes, on traits, is, even by association rather than causation, much less than is assumed in modern biology. That is why I am advocating the need for a new view of biology. Thank you.